And welcome back to the Greg Herenda Show, where we are honored and privileged to have Coach Tom Izzo of the Michigan State Spartan basketball program. Coach Izzo, welcome finally to the Greg Herenda Show.
Greg, thanks. I should feel honored, but I heard I'm the 354th coach out of 354, so you put me last on the list. Is that a best for last guy, or did you just forget about me?
Hey, you can do it what you want with it, but you're on. But, yeah, no, we've talked about you for a long time, and obviously we've known each other for a long time.
Yeah.
But we've had Big Ten coaches. We've had Coach Beilein. I know, you know, the Michigan State fans are not going to be happy. We had John Beilein on first. Franny McCaffrey, any other Big Ten coaches? You're the third Big Ten coach. Instead of the 350th coach, how about the third Big Ten?
Well, you had good guys on. John has done a good job when he was here, and now he's better get him now that he's with Cleveland. He probably has more time. And Franny, man, you got Franny on there. That must have been an effort. Did he yell at the producer or anything? Or did he
but you,
cool?
Tom, you know Franny better than anybody. Off the floor, he was just laughing the entire interview.
He's the best. He's the best. He's a good guy.
Franny's a great guy, and I, you know, as coaches, and we can just jump into it, man. You know, the pressure of coaching, and it doesn't matter. You know, we've all coached at different levels, and now you're the head coach of the Michigan Spartans, and I think you guys, I'm sure you've heard it, are picked really high next year, number one in most of the periodicals and all the magazines and all the TV stations, but people handle pressure differently. But no matter what, it makes people do different things. And Franny is just, if people knew, and a lot of people are different as people than they are on the basketball court. Where would you put yourself in that? Like when you're with your family and when you're away, do you change that much? I mean,
I wag my finger at my wife, too, so that happens once in a while. But no, I'm just kidding. You know what? Judd Heathcote, my old boss, who you worked for a little bit in the camp and everything, but Judd used to say, sooner or later, the game makes fools of us all.
That's right.
And made fools of him a lot of times. You know, he bounced the ball off his head. He did some incredible things over his career.
Yes.
But I do agree with him that it has makes fools of all. I look at it a little differently. I think I think what I am is what you see is what you get.
I think
for the most part.
Sure.
You know, I love my players. I have a good time on the court.
Yep.
It's them damn referees that cause all the problems. You know, it's not the players. It's them referees.
Never.
And I think Franny would tell you the same thing.
Yes.
And yet, most of those guys are good friends of mine, too. So when you've been in a long time, Greg, you've got a lot of different things.
You know what's funny, too, and Tom, I know this happens to you way more than I, but we go to these recruiting venues, and now for our fans out there, the referees at these recruiting venues in the summer are potential – referees for the Big Ten and the NEC, and they're run by the guys that ref our games, and our relationship in the summer is so good. It's like, you know, you see everybody, everyone's hugging, everybody loves everybody, but then when the ball goes up in the air in November all the way till, well, you played in April, life changes, and it's just, I just hope
it
gets
funny
better.
How that happens, and I would agree with you, you know. But it's the same old. I mean, I think we have game faces, and we're a little more intense when the pressure's on. And,
amen.
And I think so are the officials, you know. I mean,
no,
they got a job to do, and they got 15,000 people booing them, you know, and yelling at them, two coaches yelling at them, TV people yelling at them. They got a tough job, too. So even though I give them a lot of guff, I think most of those
guys
are really, really good guys. And probably really good at what they do. It's a hard job. I wouldn't want to be in a position.
And it's getting harder. Hey, Tom, the Greg Herenda Show is about the genesis of my guests and the beginnings of where you came from. And I just love the whole story, the Iron Mountain. I mean, it's almost like a fictitious name in school. And you played football. What position did you play in football, Tom?
God, I was a running back and a linebacker. You know, when you come from a small town, you get to play two ways, and you play all three sports. And, of course, my childhood buddy was Steve Mariucci, who ended up coaching the 49ers and the Lions. So we kind of came out of this town of 7,000 and both made it fairly big. And,
that's for sure.
We both went to Northern Michigan Division II. I started out Division II, and then I was an assistant there for a couple of years, and then came here as a GA and just kind of worked my way up. So, yeah, I think I started from the bottom up, which you did, which I think most good coaches start from the bottom up.
Amen.
You know, I think there's something to going through that manager, GA, assistant coach, associate head coach, you know, just kind of grinding your way up. And I think I even think in business, Greg, I think for the people out there that are listening, if you've come up the process way instead of the fast track way that everybody wants to do in this day and age,
amen,
I think you're better prepared for the long haul. And that's the way I've looked at it for myself.
Obviously, you mentioned Judd Heathcote, the late Judd Heathcote was your mentor. What other mentors? I know your dad, your family. Just tell me about the people growing up that kind of molded you and that you still think about in difficult situations and tight games and in big parts of your life. Who are those people?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, because when I was probably 6-7 years old, 8 years old, you know, it was the Green Bay Packers and Vince Lombardi.
I mean,
I grew up, Vince Lombardi used to come to Iron Mountain. I was not old enough to remember it all, but I did get a ball signed by him and the entire team once, and still got that in my basement. But read all his books, and then of course you know, high school coaches were influential in me, and Judd was big. And then, you know, after that, I mean, I did watch you know, a lot of guys that are friends of mine, from Nick Saban, you know, when he was here, and I looked at the Bobby Knights and Gene Cady's. John Chaney was a guy that I really learned to appreciate. The funny story is I was looking for a game to get on TV because we were never on TV.
Love it.
And he heard about it, and he called me. He said, "You want to play me?" I said, "No." And he was at Temple, and I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "Well, I can get you on TV. I'll get the game on TV." He says, "I'll come to your place first." So they came here and beat us by one.
Wow.
And then we went there.
Yeah.
And we had a decent team. And Pepe Sanchez hit a shot at the buzzer, laying on his back, to beat us by one again. And so, but John told me then, you know, keep scheduling good people and good things will happen. And you know what? That's what I did. So,
amen.
I look up to him, too, in my own way.
When you took over the reins at Michigan State, and that was your first, I believe that was your first and only Division I head coaching job. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was my only head coaching job. Well, I was a head coach in high school. When I was a GA, I took a high school job. But at Northern, I was an assistant Division II in Tulsa for 6 weeks. But, yeah, it was my first head job, and that was strange. But I was an assistant here for 12 years before that.
Did you ever, like, when you got the job, envision anything? And did you look that far ahead to see that you would accumulate the wins and the national championship and the All-Americans and the coaches that have come from your tree? Did you have, or were you scared to death? What were your thoughts going into when you first took that thing over?
Hell no on the first part and hell yes on the second. I had no idea, and I was scared to death.
Okay.
You know, in all honesty, you know, it was just year to year. I remember, you know, I got the job, and I just got married a couple years before, and my wife says, "Well, we should buy a house." I said, "Not yet. We better hang on," you know. And,
yes.
It was just, I mean, I'm blessed. I couldn't ask for more than I've gotten here. And, you know, I think I've been good for them, and they've been good for me, and it's been an interesting run. But the thing I'm proudest of, Greg, is we've sustained some level of consistency.
Oh,
you know, we've been the
22
the five
times
Final Fours in the last eight. We've been to the 23 straight tournaments. And, you know, and we've won our share of Big Ten championships. We've won more Big Ten tournament championships than anybody in our league. So we've done some good things, but as they say, you know, we've been to five Final Fours in the last 14 years, I think, or 15, and and yet we haven't won one in that stretch. So there's always some detractors out there that you got to.
Oh, absolutely.
Probably the biggest one of all of them.
And you're in the Hall of Fame. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think my part's the Hall of Shame, but I'm in one of those halls.
How is that like? I've had, you know, John Calipari on the show, Jim Calhoun, but like, obviously, John and yourself are still. Is that kind of like awkward, still coaching and playing games against your peers, and you're in the Hall of Fame, or is that something you're real comfortable with? I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to.
Yeah,
ask it
I'm
anyway.
Not real comfortable with it. I mean, you're right. It is awkward. It is strange. It was just such a privilege to be there and be in it. And I mean, it was. I remember when I got the call. I'm standing by a window right now talking to you. I was standing by the same window when they called me to tell me, and I.
Wow.
I swear, I broke down in tears. I couldn't believe it. It was a surreal deal, and yet, you know, with some of the coaches that have gotten in, I think there's so many coaches that probably deserve it more than I do. But
yep.
Every day, I appreciate what I got out of that.
Amen. Tom, the genesis of our relationship goes way back, and I think it was 19. 19- you were an assistant. Judd was the head coach. It was the same year that Stan Joplin got the assistant job at Michigan State. For the truth to be known to our listeners and my team of listeners out there, myself and Glenn Senecal, I think you remember Glenn, drove from North Andover, Massachusetts to East Lansing, Michigan to work the camp because Junior Jimmy Boylan, who is now the Chicago Bull head coach, asked me to work the camp, and we drove out, and we had no place to stay, and the next thing you knew, I was staying in the basement. I think you had a condo, right, in Michigan State, and, like, people don't realize the camaraderie of college athletics and college basketball, and we stayed there, and the great story was that in the middle of the week, I was supposed to give some woman at Michigan State my Social Security card, which I never have seen in my entire life. I never got paid for the camp. But that's what you did. That's what you did back in the day. And I was sitting next to Judd Heathcote, Tom Izzo, Brian Gregory, Stan Joplin. I mean, it was – and a bunch of great high school coaches. I mean, and that's –
you make me laugh when you tell me that story because – number one, the only numbers you were giving out was your phone number to those girls back then, and it didn't work. But number
it never
two,
worked.
It never worked. But you know, remind me the next time I see you, I'm going to give you $250 for that camp.
But,
no, I'm going to
you know
what?
I'll take
bit,
it. But no,
you do deserve that. You're right, though. The relationships, and I just talked to Jimmy Boylan this morning. He's going over to Europe in a couple of days to visit a couple of his players. But
good for him.
Yeah, you think about that group there with me, you, BG, Jimmy. I mean, it was Judd yelling at all of us. It was camps then, boy. You worked. Greg, those are long weeks, boy.
Judd, just for our listeners out there, the big – now, I don't know if – I'm sure you'll remember this, but I remember it vividly because I was coaching a team. If you didn't – each day you had to get up and tell Judd your record because if you didn't win a game, he equated that – he would rip you because the kids weren't winning and they wouldn't come back to his camp. So you – games were like so competitive. It's like – and we had this one guy, I forget who, didn't win a game, but then everyone was like, okay, the last day, we just got to let this guy win because Judd wasn't going to – he wasn't going to bring him back to camp the next week.
Remember how we had the draft?
Yes.
To rate the kids?
Yes.
You know, and Judd would say, God, you know, he's talking about guys that couldn't play Dead in a Cowboy movie. He says, remember, you're not coaching, you're babysitting. But those were some great times. And, you know, it's funny because here we are 30 years later.
That's right.
And that's what we remember. That's what we're talking about. That's why the coaching profession is so cool. And that's why it's great to know people from so many different levels. And I have a great appreciation for what you're doing there, what you're accomplishing there. You just hired one of our former guys.
Man, and we're excited.
Pretty neat. And I appreciate because I've been at different levels. I was
that's
at
right.
Tulsa for a little bit. I was at Northern Michigan. So I've been in Division II.
You're a Division II guy like myself.
Different Division I's. And let me tell your listeners – the pressures at our place and your place are no different because we're all trying to win games and we're all trying to keep our jobs. And we're all trying to make players better. And and in this day and age of the social media, it's hard.
It's hard, bro.
It's hard.
Speaking of social media, once we announced that Maurice Joseph, one of your former players, is going to be my assistant, this guy, it just blew up. It went viral. So we have a lot of people excited here about a former GW head coach, a former great player in Vermont, and a very, very good player at Michigan State. Tell me about either the recruitment or coaching. Just give me a story so that the people can kind of get an insight into Maurice Joseph as a person and as a coach.
Well, first of all, he was from Montreal, you know, so I had to learn a little French. Bonjour, madame, oui, oui, filet mignon. I used all the words I knew, you know, and tried to make sure I could last through them. But there were some long trips up there. But, you know, Maurice Joseph, just an unbelievable guy. I mean, he's the kind of guy you want your daughter to marry. He's a good person. He's a good kid. He worked hard here. He played some here. He wanted to get closer to home. He transferred to Vermont. It was good for him. Went to GW, did a great job as an assistant coach, and then took over. And as we all go through, sometimes things don't work out quite as well here and there. But I just we practiced out there when we played in the Big Ten tournament a couple years ago, and he just was so good at what he does. I think you're going to love him there, and I think the players are going to enjoy him. And yet he's good enough to be a good guy and yet tough enough hold people accountable. And that's kind of the way it's got to be done this day and age. And I think you're going to enjoy him, Greg. And if you're not, we're going to both yell at him.
No. I think it's a no-brainer from our end. I've had some great assistants here. Pat Sellers just went to Fairfield. He fills his spot. Previous to that, I had Grant Billmeyer go to Seton Hall, and then now Dwayne Lee went to St. Bonnie. So I've had good assistants, but Mojo is I said it and I feel it, like I've signed a really good player. When you get a really good coach, man, and you know that, and you've had so many good ones, it just elevates the entire program. Tom, I've got to ask you for some advice. We had just won our regular season championship. We were co-champions with St. Francis of PA. We won our conference tournament, and then we won our first ever NCAA tournament win in Dayton, Ohio. And now we come back and have to reset the bar. And you've had to do this numerous times with incredible years, 22 straight tournaments. How do you, after a successful or a very successful or the most successful year, how do you combat that letdown? How do you attack the next year? My team is going to be listening to you and our fans. What advice could you give to a coach who's had some limited success, but success nonetheless? And I'm looking for some guidance.
Well, that is a big success to and winning your first tournament. I remember we got to our first tournament game that, you know, we actually won two, and then we got to the Sweet 16 and Carolina beat us. And then the next year, I just made sure that we weren't happy and satisfied, you know?
Yes.
It's hard because fans then get used to winning, and they, you know, want that every year, which I think they don't realize coaches do too. But this day and age with transfers and all the things we got to deal with, it's hard to maintain a level of consistency. And I think the biggest thing for the players that are listening is, you know, don't be satisfied with what you accomplish. You know, everybody always says, well, you're never satisfied. Well, why should there be, you know?
Exactly.
Mike Krzyzewski's won 10 or 5 national championships.
Yes.
You know, John Wooden won 10 of them, you know. It seems like the one we've won is kind of minute.
Right.
So there's always bigger fish to fry, and I think for your program, an incredible accomplishment. You know, people just don't realize how hard that is.
Yep.
And now if you can build on it and try to grow and try to stay consistent, I think that'll be the next step to your success.
Your team this year, your goal, maybe I'm speaking out of line, but I would imagine, is to win. You know, you have many steps to get there, but is to win the national championship. Do you talk about that when they come back in August?
I do some. You know, everybody has a different approach to it. You know, it's still one game at a time. And our schedule early. Speaking of Seton Hall, we go to Seton Hall. You know how good they are going to be. We've got Kentucky out in New York in the opener. We've got possibly Kansas, and we got Duke at home. So we got a brutal schedule early.
Yep.
But at the same time, you know, that is the goal. I mean, and it's been the goal more than a couple times here, but this is one of those years. I think sometimes you have a chance and sometimes you have a bona fide chance. And I mean, we do. I mean, we're one of 8 or 10 teams that have a real chance. The problem is you got to be so lucky and you got to be good and you got to stay injury free and you got to make some free throws and you got to get those zebras to make some good calls.
No,
so they got a lot of
reasons
why you could be successful or fail.
Last thing, Tom, obviously we talked about Coach Beilein and your name has come up way more than John's, and then John makes the kind of surprise move to the Cavaliers. Is that in the rearview mirror, or could you potentially see yourself doing that, or is Michigan State your home? I don't want to sound like a reporter, but I'm just trying to see in your life where are you at.
I think I've never closed the door, but I've made it pretty clear that I'm happy where I'm at.
Right.
And, you know, I think the biggest thing we got to, and I worry for guys, younger coaches like yourself, you know, we got to keep the game of basketball headed in the right direction. I mean, I feel bad. It's really difficult for your programs. You get a really good player, and it seems like somebody's recruiting them right off your campus. I think that's a shame.
Yep.
The transfer thing, I think, is embarrassing. We got 1,000 kids transferring, whatever.
Exactly.
So I think we got some issues, and I think that had something to do, you know, with John
leaving
and why he left, you know. And so, you know, I don't know if that'll happen to me too. I don't think so, but I at the same time, you know, I got a good opportunity here. I got a good situation. It's been home for me. My wife's from here. My kids have gone to school here. So, you know, I'm ingrained here, but I don't think anybody should ever say never, you know. I mean, you never know what will happen, and some of it could be for a good opportunity, but some of it could be, you know, we got to make sure we're heading the right way, and I'm on every board there is to be on for the NABC and the NCAA and trying to help college basketball. But I think we got to be a little concerned right now in the direction it's going, and I think a lot of people would say that, maybe even you would.
You know what? For us, I'm on the other side. We've lost players due to transferring. And you know what, Tom, to be quite honest with you, it's hard to fight it. So we just – I want players that want to be here. Same thing with you with guys that want to go to the pros. Hey, if you want to go make your money now, go make it now. But if you want to be here, be here. That's my stance. And I know it seems like I might just be escaping the problem, but it's helped. We had a player, Marcus Towns, leave to go to Loyola Chicago, and then we won it. After he left, we won it with him, and we won it without him. So I think your program sustains itself, man. And what you do for the game of college basketball, NABC president, you were the champion award winner for Coaches versus Cancer. Tom, as part of college athletics and college basketball, I can't thank you enough for giving me a chance doing what you do. And you carry the torch for all the good guys in this game, and I really appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you, Greg, and the friendship for all these years.
Yes.
Thank you for working the camp, and I'll be pulling for you.
Hey, and if you don't pay me the $250, how about playing us next year? You want to talk about playing?
You know what? I might play you next year and pay you the $250.
That's double dipping. And then I need Steve Mariucci on my show, too. That's the
I'll love. Get that done for you.
There's a triple, that's a trifecta. Tom, enjoy.
Then you got to make sure I win the game.
Oh, well, you know, I think you'll have something to do about that.
All right, buddy.
Tom, enjoy the rest of your summer, man. You're the best.
Okay, Greg. Thank you so much.
Congrats
on getting mojo.
You got it, brother. Yeah. And we'll be back with more of the Greg Herendon Show after this.
This is Tom Izzo, head coach at Michigan State University. When I'm not coaching my team, which a lot of our fans think is often, I'm always listening to The Greg Herendon Show on WFDU. Because inside you knew that in one shot.